Hello, it's Christian before the interview, and what an amazing interview you're about to hear. Caroline, our guest, was great. Unfortunately, the audio quality, at least for the first half of the interview, is not going to be so great. Recently, I've taken a lot of pride in how good this show has been sounding with the local audio of each cast member. This isn't going to sound like that, so maybe it won't sound like what you're used to, but nevertheless, still, like I said, an amazing interview, and we hope you enjoy.
Welcome to the DL Gaming Podcast. It's been a fun Thursday already. I'm Amanda, doing things a little bit different with this episode. We're definitely interviewing an amazing powerhouse of a woman. Caroline Marchal is here with me. She is the CEO and creative director of Interior Night, who made As Dusk Falls, a wonderful game. She's a game designer for 20 years. She was the lead game designer in Heavy Rain and Beyond Two Souls from Quantic Dream. So she's definitely got a huge, beautiful, long list of accolades under her belt, especially with As Dusk Falls. They won a lot of reviews, a lot of high reviews. Also won the 2022 Game Awards for Best Impact. So it's an amazing game. I'm super honored to have you here with me. Thank you very much for being here with me, Caroline.
It's a pleasure. Very happy to be here.
Absolutely. So we'll get into it. I'm such a huge fan and a lover of games that have depth and story and narrative games. You know, like I think of kind of the Return of Obra Dinn as like being a masterclass. Recently for me, it was Baldur's Gate 3. I know you played some Baldur's Gate 3. I watched the BAFTA interview. Yeah. Did you finally romance Asterion? Because I know you were trying to. No, I know. Yeah, I couldn't get him either. Yep. He's he's a hard one to get. Yeah.
I'm glad you're saying that, because I was a dark urge and I spoke to Neil Newborn, who's a friend, and he was like, well, you're dark urge and you didn't manage to romance Asterion. I was like, oh, I'm so bad, don't make me feel worse.
You're like, let's do a D&D one shot and you can be Asterion and then I'll have my chance. Yeah. But going back to, you know, the game that you made, the passion project that you had, kind of in a way what you left Sony for, right? I just think that this game is just amazing. I love that games and the game that you made has so much choice and consequences. I feel like it's really realistic and very much like life, you know, where it's just it brings all of us together and I think has really some of the best experiences of the human experience, which is our ability to storytell. And I think it's where our wisdom and connection and like love comes from. And I really felt that with the game that you created with As Dusk Falls. So my first question for you is, in what ways do you really connect with some of the characters in your own game and who do you resonate with the most?
So it's, you know, in a way, you're starting with the most difficult question. Because I like them all. I love them all, actually, because we spent like 3-4 years with those characters. So for me, they're real. You know, it's strange. Like I would know if you asked me today, how would Jay react to this? I'd tell you. So I do have a lot of love for all of them. Vin's family moving cross country, like I can relate to that because I moved from France to the UK. Similarly, like I have a soft spot for Joyce, who's a single mother, like a businesswoman, you know, doing her best to provide for her son and have her own business. So I love her. I also love Zoe, especially like. I have a daughter, she's 12, she's in the room right now. Hi. She's very quiet. And when we started, like when I started thinking about this game, she was like 2 years old or something. Around that age actually. And, you know, having a little girl like Zoe in the game where you have to provide for her and make sure, you know, she's fine in this very tense situation, and then seeing her when she's a young adult, that really touches me. I'm like, how is my daughter going to grow up? And, you know, we all have issues and traumas, and how you deal with your past is a really important theme, I think, in the game. But I would say the character that moves me the most, maybe, that might be a bit unexpected is Tyler, the eldest brother of the Holtz. Because I think he's one of the most tragic characters in the story, because he's smart, but none of the Holtz were born with, good cards dealt for them. But he's smart, he's the eldest brother, so he's got to take on a lot of the family legacy. And I don't think he's super well equipped to be happy, because he's emotionally bottled up, because he has to take over and take on this brotherhood. So yeah, I feel a lot for Tyler.
Yeah,
strangely, who is not a very well loved character, I think, among the community of players. But I'm like, no, but listen to me.
No, I mean, I could see that. I think that you guys have done such a beautiful job with every character. I also really appreciated and really liked Tyler as well, because I felt that, I mean, as the one kind of carrying the weight of his family in a way, at least in my playthrough when I played with my partner, like he got caught and took the brunt of all of everything as well. And so kind of took the responsibility mm-hmm. for all of it as well. And I think was quite a victim in his own way. And I think you guys did such a beautiful job of there's no bad characters, there's no antagonist truly. Like everybody has their own depth, and they might even be the antagonist to themselves. There was always so many layers mm-hmm. to each character, and I thought that that was really beautiful, especially talking about the Holtz specifically. But
that's the best compliment. It was the intention, like certainly, you know, because you see the Holtz initially, you're like, oh, they're a group of thugs or whatever. But when you see the backstory, which is my favorite story of the entire game, you know, where you see the dad, how their dad Bear interacts with them, and this stranger story that you have to bury in the woods. All right, that shows you where they're coming from and what are their reasons for doing what they're doing.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think a great example of that too really is Jay, and how much Jay mm-hmm. can change and grow depending on the actions that you pick. Like for me, my two favorite characters that I resonated with was Zoe and Jay, which at the end it was mm-hmm. a resolve between the two of them, which to me was the most beautiful thing. And so it was done so well and so nice. And like I feel like this project was just such a great example of, because I mostly play indie video games and things like that. And I really feel like this game was such a beautiful indie dream and an indie mindset, but it was mixed with some really powerful, really like kind of like AAA talent in a sense. And especially with how you guys have come together, and especially it too being such a strong team of a lot of women, like it's incredibly inspiring. Mm-hmm. And I think you did such a wonderful job. So like, how did you create this 40 person team, and how involved were you on the day to day? I'd have to imagine you were quite involved, but did you find yourself focusing more on the business side or the designer side or the coding and engineering side, or was it kind of more balanced? Because I know you've got basically talent in all of those aspects, you yourself, let alone your team.
Yeah, I guess like it depended on the phase of the project we were on. So initially, you know, of course, to sell a project, you have to have a vision and a design. So I'm a designer, my trade, like I love game design. I'm still I see myself as a game designer. So once you had like, you know, once I had the concept and the idea of like what the sports could be, then there's the business moment where you have to pitch and sell the project. And there I learned so much. But once it's sold and you start making the game, of course, I was way more involved on the creative side, because the design was pretty much set. But it was all about how can we write this story in the right way and also make sure it comes across on screen the right way, which is, you know, once you have the script, you've gone some way towards the experience, but you're still very, very far from it. So all the work remains to be done in a way. You know, you have a solid foundation, but then you have to bring it to life. So yeah, I spend most of my time, you know, working with the writing team, and then, you know, helping, working with the cinematics team and the design team, of course. But I was very much on this side. I'll take director Ron, that handled all the tech side. Like I'm not a programmer at all. Like I did a lot of technical visual scripting, etc. when at my time at Quantic, but I've been less hands-on. Like I wasn't in Unity, for example, which I missed a little bit, I must admit. Sometimes I do miss that, but like, you know, everyone has a different role in a dev team, and it's important that I stay in my role so that to enable everybody else to do their best job. Because if suddenly I go too granular, I'm not, I'm just being a problem and a bottleneck where I should be doing my work.
Well, yeah, I mean, you got to let the talent shine where it is and it's talent. And so, I mean, then that's great. And I think that that's a, probably a really great talent of yours as well, is being a very good director and CEO, because I feel like this game really shined in a lot of ways of how it was designed. I mean, I played it by having the computer stream to the TV and then played the whole game off of the phone. And that was the second time I played it. The very first time I played it with my best friend, and we were trying to get multiplayer and even Twitch going. We couldn't get enough people to join in and play, which was the problem. But as far as like the build of it and like the interactive of it, I thought it was really well done and really just fantastic. It was so wonderful to sit there on the couch and kind of like play the game like a interactive movie, and just enjoy it, which I think was a good chunk of your guys' intention, right? It was to kind of bring in a bunch of people to really immerse themselves into this story.
100%. And, you know, I must say, like, it ended up being much better than I imagined it could have been at the beginning. And that's thanks to the talent of the team, like, because we brought, like, so many talented people from different fields.
Balance and kind of maintain your own peace within our own story of life.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it comes with age, like you got better answers. One of the things I love doing is looking at my children growing up and trying to, just because it's a joy, and trying to understand people better as well. I don't know. I think the world is pretty mad at the moment, but also fascinating. Like, life is messy, everything's chaotic. And I think, like, by getting older, I think you learn what's better for you, what you really truly care about. And, you know, you also learn to kind of slow down and look at the things around you that can feel smaller, but are actually really beautiful. Like, you know, it's going to sound tacky, but like being, you know, in the garden and just enjoying having grass under your feet or these kind of things, or just the wind on your face. But I try also, you know, to nurture my creativity by not just living life, but also, like, you know, reading books, playing games. I love playing games, of course. Like on my birthday, my treat is that I take the day off and I have a massage and I play games.
No, that's it's lovely. It's important to do the little things, right? Grounds us. I love that.
Yes.
Kind of going back a little bit, we had talked about your like business side of things briefly. So a lot of indie devs that I kind of talk to, they face a lot of challenges when they're trying to find a publisher to take on their project. And so would you mind walking us through kind of how you got Xbox to be a publisher? And do you have any advice for those developers that are trying really hard to land a deal, such as when you left Sony, which was, I'm sure, a really great path, but you went to pursue your own passion and your project. So I'd imagine it was kind of a lot and hard in a way to find a publisher in a sense as well too, right? So do you have any advice for them?
Yeah, I wished. It feels like it was only 8 years ago, but it feels like it was an entirely different era. And honestly, I did it because I was like, I don't know, I'll take the plunge. I really want to make this game. I don't care what happens. Like I just had my second baby, my son. And I was like, I'll try for a year. If it doesn't work, I'll rethink. But it was a much more, I think it was an easier time. Right now, I don't pretend that I understand exactly what's going on, but I think it's like a lot more ruthless and difficult. But what I did basically is that I bootstrapped for a year. I had, you know, my partner was working, so he was providing for us, and I was like quite nimble. It was just me and a friend, and we were pitching together. He helped me with the business side, and I was, you know, in the rooms for the creative, and I just used LinkedIn to get connections. And obviously my past at Quantic Dream opened many doors. Everybody loves Heavy Rain. Like in the industry, it's still like a big thing, which is great, like honestly. But I think nowadays it's much harder to navigate because the publishers don't really know, I feel, what they want to do, because everything's a bit scary. I think right now to them, the big bets don't necessarily pay off. The smaller bets it's harder to stand out. There are many games and a lot of them are great. Mm-hmm. Even the great games don't always succeed. So it's unsettling. But I think my advice would be the same, just go with your gut, be bold, because if you're trying to tick off boxes, maybe it will please a publisher, but honestly, I don't think it's very fulfilling. And also, I don't think it's doing a service to the publishers, because sometimes, you know, if they're trying. And you can't make great things with an Excel sheet, essentially. So I think originality is still key, but you have to have commercial acumen. Maybe 6 years ago, it was possible to start with just 20 millions in the bank. I don't think that's possible right now. And or maybe it is for games that are certainly aren't narrative then. But I think when I pitched as the Force, it was even smaller than what it ended up being, because I was like, I'm not going to ask for all those 20 millions. Because first, I'm not sure I can manage those. I've never done that before. I don't want to be crazy. But also it felt like it's too much of a bet for a new studio, even if we're veterans, the core team has 15, 20 years of experience, each of them for sure. But still, it's a new team, as in we haven't shipped before together. And we're learning. We're all learning as we do it. So it felt like, be mindful of the kind of bet you're asking potential partners to take. And also, what's your potential audience? Like, I knew who I wanted to talk to, in terms of audience. Like, as you said, the people on the couch, your friends, your partners, because I love co-op. There's not that many co-op games, right? And when you say multiplayer, people think competitive, blah, blah, blah. But that's not the approach we had with As Dusk Falls, because you share stories, you don't compete against another exactly. person for a story, right?
Yeah.
So it was having a very clear sense of who we want to make this game for, and why. And then come up with, a proposal that's not crazy expensive, that makes sense, that will stand out, that's a new approach to narrative that's never been done before. So was that originality, sensible on the commercial side, and with a very clear sense of who you want to talk to in terms of who you want to attract as an audience.
Yeah, and your direction. That's great. That's wonderful advice. I'm curious too as to what kind of advice or challenges you'd had with, because I know that as you were building this game as well, you guys were dealing with COVID. And so, I mean, how was that experience? I know that you had kind of this script, and it wasn't really voice actors, it was film actors. And so kind of how was that process of trying to navigate a pandemic and also work with your team and work with very live things? Because you could have went with animation and voice actors and they could have sat at home and did it, but instead you went with actual actors acting this out. And so how was that process and kind of handling and dealing with COVID during that?
It delayed us for sure. I remember we had a shoot in February 20, and I was like, this is coming, this is not good. So that shoot was we managed to finish that shoot, but we had a very big shoot block. I think it was planned for April or May 2020. And at this time, the lockdown had hit, so we had to push it. It delayed development, even because, as you said, we were filming with live actors, but we also had VO recording sessions. because some of the actors do the voice and the visual performance, but we didn't record the sound on the shoot. So we did also like tons of VO sessions where you had one actor in LA, another one in London, and they didn't record together, even if they were both in LA, which normally without COVID, you would have them both in the booth, and it's much easier, much better for them as well to have the other person to react to. So it took longer. Essentially, this is what happened. It took longer. It wasn't undoable. It was a bit more painful, mm-hmm. and it took longer.
Did that kind of have an impact too on the inspiration of the art style of the game, or was that something completely different? Because this art style and this graphic choice and design in this game is super unique. At first, I think it was kind of like, whoa, this is really weird and really different. And then I grew to love it. I remember, I think, seeing in an interview, you had stated that you purposely wanted kind of less pixels to kind of let the story sit and the imagination go. And I think that you can absolutely see that and feel that as you're playing the game. So, I mean, but did COVID impact that too with that choice? Like, would you have done kind of more of live action and showing those clips? Or did you have this kind of set in your mind that you wanted this art style from the very beginning?
It was set from the beginning because we felt, you know, that CG couldn't honor the story we had because it's so grounded, so real, that you need the full performance of the actors to be here, like all the nuances in their faces, because it's not about, you know, winning the game or having this or that tactic. It's about understanding the characters on screen and understanding what they feel and what they mean and what they want, even if they don't say it. So we felt like we absolutely need real people. So that was set from the start. And then we also went for the paired back animation style because every image, character image, is hand painted. So, you know, that's a lot of images across the game, like 18,000 or something.
It's beautiful, though.
It's unique, right?
Yeah.
I love it, too.
It's unique.
But we felt, oh, that we can achieve with, you know, the team size we have, which was at peak 40 people. And, of course, external partners, but, like, it wasn't that crazy. Like, we could achieve that much better than trying to go for hyper-real, you know, like The Last of Us, or, you know, even Beyond Two Souls is aiming for that, which is, you know, even if you throw a ton of money at it, you still don't have the same fidelity than you do when you're working with real people, real faces, real actors who can bring, like, their own performance, like, a lot more one-to-one mm-hmm. when it's live action and filmed than when it's motion captured or performance captured. So it was 100% to honor the story, to make it doable for the size of our team, but also to stand out. Because we're like, this is unique, never seen that before. It's very, still very cinematic, but it's paired back so that, you know, you have, your imagination fills the blanks and you kind of draws you in. It kind of draws you in because your mind is very active, like filling all those, you know, in-betweens.
Yeah. And then also, too, the talent of it being hand-painted, and that's just beautiful, I think, mm-hmm. in a beautiful artistic style. Mm-hmm. But I'm really happy to hear that, like, it wasn't some sort of, I'm sure in a way it obviously helps a little bit to have that kind of style already in mind and know that you're going to be doing that when COVID hit anyway, because then you don't have to deal with all the delays and difficulty of trying to film that. But I think that that's really cool and definitely something super unique that has As Dusk Falls standing out compared to any other narrative game is the way mm-hmm. you guys went about showing this, because it definitely mm-hmm. reads and it's beautiful. And so have there been any kind of surprising opinions or playthroughs that have stood out since launch?
I mean, I had the, so compared to, you know, Heavy Rain or Beyond Two Souls, like at the time when it came out, there wasn't any streams. So when As Dusk Falls came out, I was on Twitch every night watching French streamers, American streamers, Brazilian streamers, even when I didn't understand what they were saying. It was just so funny because you could feel the reaction to the story and their emotions. But like, even recently, I was watching Granny, I think, playing when the game came out on PlayStation. And I'm just amazed by, one, when it's played on Twitch and the community participates, I love the dynamic it creates with the streamer, but also seeing like how different the communities can be depending on the streamer. It can be like some of them can be more raucous or others are a lot more, you know, understanding, less jokey and more like really serious, really into it. And I think the game accommodates all that. It's quite cool to see all these different experiences. But in general, what you can see is that everyone is really narrative savvy. Every time we planted, you know, that shot lasts a little extra second on the character, and then you understand like, oh, maybe he's hiding something. Mm-hmm. Or like, you know, how they picked on all those little hints we put in there was really rewarding to watch. And yeah, the broadness of reactions, like some, you know, some playthroughs, people are very dead set on like, oh no, you shouldn't do this, or Jay would never do that. And you watch somebody else play and it's the entirely different reasoning that leads them to pick the other choice. And they really feel strongly about it. And I think that's great because again, like we were trying to write so that we don't judge the characters and that will let you try and understand where they're coming from and make their the best, what you think is the best decision on their behalf. Mm-hmm. And you know, so yeah, that's the beauty of it. And we took like really a lot of care like, to make sure every decision would be balanced. So we had like telemetry of where on every choice is. And when we did user testing, we're like, why is this branch never picked or not picked enough? So we try to rebalance the story and the labels on the choices so that it makes it more sense and it feels reasonable. So we were making sure like, yeah, we had this split. And when you have a good split, you're like, this is good. Sometimes yeah. You don't want a great split. You know, like there's this suicide scene you want. You're like, you expect most players to save Bear, right? In this mm-hmm. scene, it's a very emotional scene. So, but we were still happy that some felt, well, no, for Jay, it's best that he walks away because it makes sense for this character. And Bear is a really difficult person to deal with and he's desperate. So, you know, having those, still those balance was really important. And it showed like in the playthroughs and when you look at the percentages afterwards, like it's pretty balanced.
Yeah, I think you guys made such like amazing decisions with those things too. Like I absolutely love that at the end of every chapter, you get kind of your, these are your traits. Mm-hmm. This is how you played. And it's a beautiful mm-hmm. way to kind of compare and see things. And it really goes to show kind of the group that you're playing with. And also it shows the replayability of this game too, which is difficult in a narrative game. Cause typically you go through the story and you're like, okay, I know what the story is. But with As Dusk Falls, there's so many different ways that the story could go. And when you're playing with different people, like my playthrough with my best friend and my playthrough with my partner were quite different. And it was really exciting. There were things like, I mean, my playthrough with my partner, like Vince died and we were like, oh, I was like, I didn't have this happen in my first one. Like, and it changes the story. And also to the depth as well, going on that specifically, like the playthrough with my best friend, it was, I think only Michelle was shot and that was it. And the PTSD and kind of the way that Zoe handled that was slightly different than with Vince dying as well. And I was like, that was really beautiful the way that you guys countered for or like prepared for that and elaborated on mm-hmm. that and kind of showcased it as well, while also still kind mm-hmm. of showing that we have to face our past and it's best to face it and go through it and face it forward mm-hmm. and move on with it. It's a part of us, but it doesn't define us. And I thought yeah. that you guys showcased that so beautifully. And it is very cool. I loved too at the end that you got to see the branches and got to see at the end. Cause at the end of this game, my partner and I were being like, oh, we could, that could have happened. Like, and it's so exciting. Like you were saying too, with the percentages, like I think of, I mean, the Bear and suicide is definitely a great example. Like another one too, I think is Jay kind of crushing the fingers of Tyler or pulling him up and helping him, you know, does mm-hmm. he forgive him mm-hmm. or does he kind of be like, I've had enough of this? Like, and so that's mm-hmm. another good one where I think it was like, I wanted to say it was like 60% let Tyler get caught or something like that, but it's close. Like yeah. that's still close to the 50%. Right. And so that's a really good example of, yeah, that you guys have it nicely balanced and stuff. And so I don't know if it ties into my next question, but I'm very curious as to, I mean, you're from France, you moved to the UK, a lot of your team is based out of the UK. Why did you guys pick Arizona?
Well, I think it's because the story is in some ways a neo-Western. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, we talk about Two Rock as a small town, but you never go to Two Rock. It's on the fringe. And because the story is about, you know, it's quite this pressure cooker where, you know, they're in intense situations, and this is where your true character really comes through. So it has to be in the wilderness. And Arizona, it has these like massive landscapes, which is a perfect setting for a visceral story. So it felt like that. It's like the landscape is a canvas. We went to Arizona, and like, it's so big, even your huge 4x4s seem really small. You're like, okay, the yes. trains like pass through for minutes and minutes. In Europe, you never see that. Like, it's stupid. It's not that scale in Europe. So it felt like, yeah. And for me also, because it's not in Europe, it gives it that kind of how would you say, what's the word, like, it's you know, it's not necessarily set in the stories are set, like the characters belong to this place, right? Mm-hmm. But the themes are universal.
Yes.
And so it felt like it was like, by putting it away from like my culture, like it felt we could reach the universal.
Yeah, I thought it was such a, I lived in Arizona for a little bit, and to me, like, I loved it. I felt like the story took place in some small town somewhere in between like Sedona and Flagstaff, because you had woods and stuff exactly. in there. And like, it's, I have a soft spot for Arizona because I feel like it's magical. It's a magical place in the United States. And a lot of it's because of the landscape. It's beautiful, the colors. So it was, I thought, a very smart design choice to have that location there. And I'm glad that you got to spend some time and see Arizona, because I feel like you did reflect it quite well. And also, too, I'm originally from the Midwest. I felt like the story of the Holtz was one that I have seen in rural parts of the Midwest as well. And so there you go, mm-hmm. that universal part that you were kind of touching on. I mean, did such a mm-hmm. good job with the characters and the setting with that, but that's really cool. Did you have a favorite thing from Arizona? Like, did you get to try any of the prickly pear or any of the food or anything? Or did you see the Grand Canyon? Like,
no, I didn't have the chance. I've seen it like 30 years ago when I traveled with my parents, but no, I think the really cool stuff was the food. The food was pretty good on the reservation. We had like this massive,
is it a fried
Mexican
bread?
Inspired.
Yeah,
it was amazing. Really good. And the people, I thought the people were adorable. Like, we went to, I think it was a gas station, and there was this old couple still there, and they opened up their shop, obviously, and they were like very happy for us to take pictures. And a lot of their gas station, the design of the this dream is inspired by that gas station, because they had this pointy roof. They had refurbished everything. They were absolutely lovely.
Oh, that's perfect. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, that's so cute. Were there any kind of challenges that you did experience in the design, or that you were experienced, or I guess now that time has passed, is there anything you would change? I mean, would you, it sounds like you would have not changed the setting, obviously, but because Arizona's great, but were there any kind of things that you would change now?
Honestly, no, I love it. Like, I'm very proud of what we've done. If in terms of for the development process, I wished we would have been better, faster, of course. Like, you know, we had quite a few rewrites, not necessarily to change the story, but like to refine the dialogue, making sure the characters came across the way we intended, that they were relatable. So that was the part where I'm like, oh, I wished we could have hit that better, but we learned, you know, it's good. It's good. Like, it was our first game together. So obviously you can do better afterwards. And you know, like the multiplayer, like it was quite ambitious because you see the story, but there's a lot in the back under the hood. Like the multiplayer, you can, the number of controllers, you know, can play with your phone with any controller, keyboard and mouse. You can cross play across platforms. You can play online, local, or mixed. There's the Twitch mode and all that. That's a lot, actually.
It's a lot.
It's not as simple as a single player narrative experience, right? Already it becomes like a much bigger beast. But I'm very happy we did that. I wouldn't change that, especially the Twitch mode. You know, at some point we dropped the feature, and then because thanks to COVID, actually, we had to take a bit more time. So we thought, oh, why don't we put this back in? And I'm so glad we did.
Oh, that's awesome. And I feel like with using my phone as a controller, I was really impressed actually as well, because I was expecting when I first booted it up that it was just going to give me the options to click. I wasn't expecting it to be, you have full control over the cursor and you can move. And now this is almost like remoting in using your phone onto the PC. And I was like, that is a lot of work that went into doing this and like being able to have everything integrated and everybody be a part of it, especially with overrides and Twitch. It's really impressive, I think, what you and your team have achieved with this. And I mean, I guess another question I've got kind of related to this is, since it has been about 2 years since launch, like, is there anything that you would like listeners or people who have not played this game to know? Or has your perception changed at all about in the past 2 years on your game? Or you still love it just as much?
So it's I still love it. And sometimes I thought, because it's been 2 years, as you say, like once it comes out, you're like, obviously it's kind of nerve-wracking, like watching people react, and some people hate it, some people love it. You know, you hear everyone has an opinion, so you hear the full
spectrum.
But then, and you know, also once it's out, you're like, okay, I don't have to play it again. Because I've played it so many times, but then I keep playing. Like, I've played with my friends, I've played it with my mom, who's 73. She never played a game before, but she felt really competent playing with us, and she was like, you know, she was all about making decisions. That was like, oh, we did well, you know. Or sometimes when I replay on the stream, because we've done a few streams, we play the first few chapters, you're like, oh, the tension builds up really well. So, you know, we did a good job with that. It still works. And also there's a nostalgia of like, oh, this is Jay and this is Dale and this is Sharon and here is Vince. Like, you know, those characters, as I said earlier, like they are alive. So, that's been like, no, it's been, I'm still very proud of it. And when I see it, I'm like, no, actually, because sometimes you become really critical of what you've done. But when I see it again, I'm like, no, it's quite successful in achieving what we were set to achieve. Absolutely. So, yeah. And it feels like it's a genuine game, you know. It's a genuine game.
It is. It's a beautiful game. I'd imagine as time has gone on, you've probably, like, it sounds to me like you have fallen more in love with it, actually, because you were right. There's a good chunk of people that get much more critical and they're like, I should have done this. But it sounds like you keep finding these new corners of it where you're like, oh, I love this. No, I love that. Oh, I love how this has gone. Yeah.
Yeah, but for sure there are things I'm like, no, I don't like that. For sure. You know, you can't avoid it. You have to be critical a little bit. Yeah. But no, as a whole, no.
Yeah, so I got just two more questions in your time. And so I guess the next question I feel like a lot of people are kind of thinking of, and probably you are yourself, is that, like, what's next? You know, are you working on, are you working on life stuff and focusing more on being a mother in your life? Or are you working on an extension of this game? Or what's next for Caroline?
So we are working on a new project. I mean, finally, yes. I can't tell anything about it just
yet.
That's
fair.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I think it's gonna kick ass. So that's the main thing at the studio. And on the personal side, I'm just trying to enjoy it. My daughter started secondary, as you can see. Piece of work. You know, my children are happy. I'm getting ready for my blue belt in kickboxing, and you know, trying to not to tune in too much to, like, trying to keep sane with the state of the world, like looking at the state of the world is really tough and worrying, but keeping hope is important and connecting with people is important.
Absolutely. And seeing all sides of the narrative and keep sticking with the little things, like you said, with the gardening and the different ways that kind of keep us all grounded, I think is incredibly important. But that is very exciting. I will definitely be keeping my eyes open and hopefully get to interview again when that next project happens. I would love that. Are there any games that you're playing right now? Or I guess what is kind of like your greatest inspiration or some of your biggest inspirations when you go into a game to design?
So in terms of games I enjoy to play, they are not necessarily the games that inspire me. These are the games I can be jealous of, though. Yes. You know, I'm like, this is so good. But in a good way. I love being jealous, like, in a good way. Right now I'm playing 1,000 Times Resist. I think it's awesome. It's a narrative game set in this weird future with a lot of mystery. It's beautiful. I've just started The Rise of the Golden Idol because I'm a big fan.
I love that game.
The Golden Idol. Yes.
It's a good one. Yes.
I've played like all the DLCs. Like I play with my partner because this is one of the few games where, you know, as a genre puzzle, like you can, it doesn't matter if you don't hold the controller, you're still engaged. So that's one that we really enjoy. So we started just yesterday. But in terms of inspiration, like, games that inspired me in the past, like it's a lot of Japanese game from the early 2000s, Shadow of the Colossus, Kena 7, the Metal Gear series. I've talked about Metal Gear multiple times, like honestly, but it's from a design perspective more than a story perspective. So I think there's always brilliance in any of the any of the Metal Gears, like there's always a moment you're like, wow, this is awesome. And like Nomad Soul was also, Omicron the Nomad Soul, like an earlier game from Quantic Dream, was a big inspiration because it was this open world at the time, you know, very moody, very atmospheric, where you had a sense of freedom. And it just convinced me that, you know, games are a super powerful medium. And that they're both at the crossroads of tech and art. And I think it's just super exciting. Like, so these are the kind of inspirations, but sometimes I get inspired by games in an entirely different genre. So I spoke before, I think it's not even a game, but it's more an experience for the game of like Twitch-based Pokemon. I was like, this is weird and cool because the community is writing minutes and stuff and there's story happening and they're collaborating. And that was the early inspiration for As the Souls, which ends up being a totally different game. But, you know, it's that kind of like, even in a book or in a film, like trying to make the odd connection or translate, like, what would it mean in an interactive narrative experience to translate this feeling or this mechanic into a narrative. So it's these kind of weird diagonals I'm trying to create.
It's beautiful. I think it's a wonderful reflection as dusk falls and you know, just the concept of narrative and meshing community together is such a beautiful way to, you can always find common ground with anyone regardless of what background or where they come from or their views. And I love these kind of games that really showcase that. And I feel like As Dusk Falls absolutely nailed it out of the park with that. And it was great. Awesome. I love the community as well. So thank you so much again for meeting with me, the interview, us troubleshooting. We're getting through it. It's pre-Friday at least, you know, I got one more day and I can enjoy the weekend. So I appreciate you so much for meeting with me and interviewing.
Well, thank you for your patience when I went through this stupid troubleshooting. And it was a pleasure to talk to you. It was anytime we do that again.
It was wonderful. I will absolutely be keeping an eye out for Interior Night and what it has to be producing some more in the next project. And I'm really hoping that we'll get to talk again. So yes, I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Thank you. You too, Amanda. Enjoy your Thursday.
Yes.